Good morning. It is time to get up with Drew Brees, speaking to the public and to his teammates. Yesterday, you'll hear what he said right off the top. Then, it's official. They're back. We've got all the details. Who is in the best position to win it all in what will be an unprecedented postseason for the NBA? And then, it's getting ugly for our national pastime. The players are ready to call it off. Can baseball be saved before it's too late? We'll answer those and other questions as we get up with you starting right now on a Friday. From Bristol, Connecticut, I'm Mike Greenberg, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us this morning on what is a very busy day in the world of sports with all the news about the NBA's return and real trouble for Major League Baseball. We'll get to all of that, but we begin with the latest involving Drew Brees. During an hour-long virtual team meeting yesterday, Brees addressed his Saints teammates and again apologized for his controversial comments on disrespecting the flag. Then last night, Brees made his second apology on Instagram. This one was on camera.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yesterday. I know that it hurt many people, especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our black communities. I am sorry, and I will do better, and I will be part of the solution, and I am your ally. And I know no words will do that justice.
Michael Thomas is, of course, Drew Brees' teammate in New Orleans. He posted yesterday, "One of my brothers made a public statement that I disagreed with. He apologized, and I accept it because that's what we are taught to do as Christians. Now back to the movement, hashtag George Floyd." Mike Triplett covers the Saints for us here at ESPN, joins us live this morning. Mike, Brees met with his teammates yesterday. What can you tell us about what happened?
Well, nobody is giving Drew Brees a free pass, Mike, but it was a positive meeting in that a lot of guys got things off their chest. It didn't get too emotional. Brees spoke. There was a positive dialogue, I was told, between him and Malcolm Jenkins, who we heard from the other day. And a couple players described it as really important for them to have this kind of meeting, and hopefully these kind of difficult conversations, they say, are taking place all over the country. Obviously a lot of hurt, a lot of anger, a lot of disappointment with Drew Brees, but also an understanding, I think, from a lot of his teammates that he is going to try to do everything in his power to make it right if he can.
What kind of impact, if it is possible to start to consider, do you think this has on the team moving forward?
Well, one thing I think was really impressive, Mike, and it even started on this show yesterday when you guys spoke to DeMario Davis, is the way the other leaders of this team are leading the charge to try and bring the team together. They're real public shows of forgiveness. You just read the quote from Michael Thomas on Twitter. We saw that from several teammates, Alvin Kamara among them. And Sean Payton echoed the words of DeMario Davis, saying, "That's what I love about this team." So, you know, we wondered, how can a team get through this, especially when it is their most visible leader, Drew Brees, who is at the center of this turmoil? And I think what we saw is a lot of other leaders stepping up to say, we are going to try to, you know, lead the way to make this team come together. But again, not giving Drew Brees a free pass, but finding a way, positive way forward through this.
All right, Mike Triplett, have a great weekend. Thank you, my friend. And we'll check in with you as this continues over the next few days. Meanwhile, Charles Barkley was on last night. TNT did a broadcast looking ahead to the NBA season, but he was asked about the situation involving Drew Brees. He had some very interesting comments. Here was Charles.
Drew's original statement, I thought, was insensitive. It was very insensitive, especially during this time. But I thought the negative reaction from every talking head on television and some of his teammates was overkill. I've never heard a bad word about Drew Brees in my life. He made a mistake.
That was Charles last night. My crew this morning is here. Desmond Howard is with me this morning. Dan Orlovsky and Mike Tannenbaum. Guys, good morning. And Dan, I will just start with you. As you have watched all of this unfold, and you just heard what Charles said, and obviously there have been so many words spoken about this. Dan, what thoughts do you have this morning?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing, Greeny, is to realize we have two ears and one mouth. And for most of us, it's a big deal that we need to sit back and listen and truly hear things that are getting said and try to listen, learn, and then lead. And in regards to Drew and his apology, it's an apology. And some people are going to take it and that'll be enough. And then some of his teammates are going to go, that's not enough. I need more. And it's going to need to be kind of an everyday remorse out of Drew. And he's going to need to put his words into action. And, you know, his comments are, you know, I promise to fight every day for what is right. That needs to be something that we all need to adopt into our lives. To always be an ally. That is something that we all need to adopt into our lives. And I think that the overwhelming message that so many have said and so many have heard this past 10 days is to hear and to listen and to absorb. And then listening needs to become action. And so this is Mike Triplett said, important conversations, that the Saints had a really important conversation. I think we all need to adopt that mindset, that these are really important conversations that are going to be uncomfortable and difficult to be had, but we need to have them. And so it's hopefully a good example for many of us that we need to sit back and listen.
Des, we haven't had a chance to talk to you in the last 2 weeks. What do you make of all this?
Well, listening to Charles, well, thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate this. Listening to Charles Barkley say he made a mistake, I think if we go back to what happened Wednesday, it's really difficult, Greeny, for me to call that a mistake. I mean, he spoke his truth. He spoke what he felt. He probably did it at the worst time possible. Therefore, you may call him tone deaf. Like, how could you not read the room? But he spoke his truth, and people questioned, well, shouldn't he have an opinion? Can a guy have an opinion? Of course he can have an opinion. And then those behind him, they can have an opinion about his opinion, and then he deserves whatever smoke that he gets. Now, the thing about Drew Brees is that he's a really beloved football player. Everyone loves Drew Brees. They, you know, everyone likes him a lot, and he does a lot for the community, especially in New Orleans. But that interview he did cut deep. It cut real deep, probably about as deep as you can cut a people without actually killing them. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of healing that Drew Brees has to do moving forward. And it's far more than just the words. Now, it was a miscalculation on his part, not a mistake. And why I say that, Green, is because what Drew Brees did in that interview is he really tried to speak to the Americans based on patriotism, talking about how his grandfathers fought in World War II and how it brings tears to his eyes when he thinks about that. And he puts his hand over his heart and he pledges allegiance to the flag and he hears the national anthem. He was trying to speak to Americans who at this point, they're in a different place. He was talking from 4 years ago when Colin Kaepernick first did the protest, the peaceful protest. America right now, Greeny, is in a much different place than she was 4 years ago. So that was his miscalculation, and that's what he's apologizing for right now. But I would never call it a mistake. The young man spoke his mind, his true feelings, and he gave his opinion. But now that locker room has been divided. Dan can tell you, when he made that statement, when he gave that interview, he pretty much separated his locker room with like yellow crime scene tape. I've never seen anything like this before in professional sports from a leader like Drew Brees. And at that point, Sean Payton, the head coach, he was in full and complete damage control because he knew he lost his locker room and he could not move forward with a season with the locker room divided in the way it is. So there's a lot of healing that's going to have to happen throughout from now moving forward. But I would hesitate to call that a mistake.
I need to ask you what I grant is a personal question. And obviously, if you were a teammate of Drew Brees, you would have a relationship with him, a pre-existing relationship that would probably inform the answer to this. But if you were a member of that team, Des, how do you think you would react to this? And what would you need to hear for it to become okay?
I would have to, I'm the type of guy, Greeny, I'm a one-on-one guy. Like, I wouldn't even want to call it confront him. I would just man-to-man have a face-to-face talk with Drew Brees and let him understand that I don't know where you're coming from, but are you educated on who else fought in the war? Are you educated on what happened after? Are you educated about what's happening in the world right now, Drew? Drew, when Colin Kaepernick took that knee, don't forget, Nate Boyer, who was a Green Beret who fought for this country, is the one who told him, listen, I believe in the right to peaceful protest, but you shouldn't sit on the bench. You should take a knee. He told Kaepernick to take a knee. I would ask Drew, are you aware that that was the reason behind him taking a knee? Because of racial injustice and police brutality? So broaden it beyond your world and understand your teammates' world. Understand the pain that your teammates have to go through every day as citizens of this country. So I would have a heart-to-heart with Drew. And then from there, we would watch him closely and judge his actions, because his actions will speak much louder than his words.
I appreciate that very much, Des. Thank you. Mike Tannenbaum, I come to you because, you know, this is a story that is about a lot more than football, obviously, but we are a sports show. And if you're in that organization right now, how are you trying to handle this situation?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with what happened yesterday in the team meeting. The most effective type of leadership is player-led leadership. And obviously, Drew Brees made a mistake. He held himself accountable, and he talked about how moving forward his actions will speak louder than his words. And I think his teammates should and will keep him and hold him to that standard. And moving forward, you hope that he's part of active participation in the community with programs that are sustainable well beyond this new cycle when things start to quiet down from the recent tragedy. So I think the player-led leadership, his relationship with guys like DeMario Davis, Malcolm Jenkins are critical, that they can move forward and that his apology was authentic, genuine. And he talked about accountability, and I'm sure his teammates will hold him that way. And that's really the best chance for the team to move forward after what happened over the last recent days.
All right, we are just getting started this morning. We'll have a lot more on this. Stephen A. later today on this, Jalen, and a whole lot more. Meanwhile, other very big news in the world of sports. Coming up next, the NBA is returning. Does that mean KD is coming back? You will hear something from Vegas that might suggest it's a possibility. And while the NBA has a return date, Major League Baseball has only friction. Why that season is in real jeopardy right now. It's Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Get Up is brought to you by the makers of non-drowsy 24-hour Claritin, Live Claritin Clear, and by Disney Plus. All of your favorites all in one place. Sign up today. Big news. The NBA Board of Governors yesterday approved the league's 22-team restart proposal by a vote of 29-1. The season is now tentatively scheduled to resume July 31st at Disney's Wide World of Sports in Orlando. The Blazers were the only team to vote against. When the restart happens, there will be 22 teams playing. Each will have 8 regular season games over 16 days. There'll also be daily testing for everyone within the bubble. The commissioner, Adam Silver, on TNT's Inside the NBA last night, was asked if he thought it was fair for injured players like Kevin Durant to potentially return. Here's what he said.
There's so much here that's not fair, and I think we were choosing among multiple bad alternatives, given the pandemic we're dealing with. And I think that many of the teams that weren't able to resume play, those eight teams that are not included, thought it was unfair. And I think there were also some of the teams that are already, in essence, had mathematically made the playoffs, that it's unfair to give some of these six teams an opportunity to play in. And I think ultimately, to the extent a team has a healthy roster and those players are able to come back, they are eligible to play.
Well, that feels important, especially when you consider this. Look at the way the numbers moved at Caesars on the Nets. Their odds to win the championship dropped from plus 75,000 to just plus 6,000 from the time the season was suspended to this day. Which brings us to our NBA insider, Brian Windhorst. Wendy, a bunch of stuff to cover here, but let's start with that. What is the possibility that we see Kevin Durant and maybe even Kyrie Irving in this restart?
Officially, no. The Nets have come out and said that. Woj has reported that.
That would be a real shame if we've lost him right in the middle of that answer. Again, this is an extraordinarily important point when you consider what these guys are coming back from. Kyrie with a history of injuries in the surgery, and of course, Kevin Durant, who blew out the Achilles last year in the NBA Finals, and no one thought he'd come back this season, but this season has just been extended months beyond where it had originally been. Am I being told we have Wendy again? Go ahead, Brian. What is the possibilities on KD?
Yeah, so the official answer from the Nets is no, that is not going to happen. I actually think that there was a better chance if it was just a 16-team playoff and not this playoffs plus model, because the schedule that they have laid out here will be a little bit grueling for anybody coming off of a big layoff. There will even be back-to-backs, not only in the return games and the regular season games, but also the first round of the playoffs. That's a lot to ask. So while I think Durant will get an opportunity to practice with his team, I just think that it may be too high of a volume of schedule to really expect him to want to tackle that. As for Kyrie Irving, he has a 4 to 6 month recovery timetable. He is back working out, but that would not put him in position to return normally. So I can't rule it out. I'm not telling you it's not a good bet, but I think my hopes are a little dimmed after this schedule announcement.
Wendy, I have 45 seconds here. Unfortunately, is all the time I have. Quickly, what's the other most important thing that fans need to know or be thinking about as we get this thing started?
We're going to find out a lot next week when there's a protocol put out. It is going to be over 100 pages long. It is going to include a whole lot of things that are going to be frustrating, challenging, and difficult for people and players to accept. We already got a taste of it last night with the coaches pushing back on the idea that some of them may have special conditions because they're up there in age. It's going to be really hard. The schedule part of this was easy. The health and safety part of this is going to be harder than you can possibly imagine.
All right. Great work. Wendy, thank you so much. Next week, we'll really dive into a bunch of this. Have a great weekend, my man. I appreciate it. I'll take a break. We'll come back, start a new hour here, and we'll talk more about Drew Brees, who met with his teammates yesterday, offered an apology. What were his teammates saying afterwards? You will hear it as we continue. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We have a very busy day coming your way here on ESPN. We are live with you until 10:30 Eastern time this morning. We'll be followed by First Take, then SportsCenter, NFL Live, and The Jump. At 4 o'clock Eastern time will be a UFC Live previewing UFC 250 from Las Vegas tomorrow. Then a 3-hour SportsCenter comes your way at 5 o'clock. The PTI guys will join that show and cap your day with SportsCenter tonight at 11 o'clock Eastern. So a full day here on ESPN. Which is how we begin this morning here with you on a Friday. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol, Connecticut this morning, and we thank you so much for starting your day and getting up with us. It's a very busy day in the world of sports. The NBA is coming back. Major League Baseball is in real trouble. And, of course, the continued reaction to all of the things going on with Drew Brees and the National Football League. We'll cover all of that for you as we begin this new hour of Get Up here on ESPN, starting right now. Let's get up and go. Starting today, NFL coaching staffs will be permitted to return to team facilities as the league is increasing the maximum number of personnel allowed at team facilities to 100. Reopening is still contingent on state and local permission, so we'll keep an eye on it. Hockey. The NHL has announced the teams will be allowed to reopen their facilities starting June 8th as long as local regulations allow. There will be a best-of-five series for the qualifying round of the 2014 playoff, followed by four playoff rounds. All of those will be best-of-seven. June 8th is this coming Monday. The WNBA is proposing a 22-game regular season, which would start July 24th at the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Details of the playoffs, which would end in October, have not yet been specified, so we'll keep an eye on that. And then to the NBA, where the Board of Governors approved the league's 22-team restart proposal yesterday by a vote of 29-1. The season is now tentatively scheduled to resume July 31st at Disney's Wide World of Sports in Orlando. The Blazers, by the way, were the only team to vote against that proposal. With the season approved to restart, here are some of the key dates. Games would begin July 31st. The last possible date of the season, Game 7 of the finals, would be October 12th. The draft and free agency will commence shortly thereafter with the hope the next season beginning on December 1st. And with all of this news out there, we have three insiders lined up to bring you the very latest with us this morning. Diana Russini is actually in another room in this same building. She joins us live this morning. We have Jeff Passan ready with the baseball news. And Adrian Wojnarowski-Woj, I will start with you as the NBA is returning. Right this minute, as fans are getting ready, what is the most important thing they need to know?
Well, Greeny, the final hurdle for the league's return rests with the Players Association today. They have a call set with their team player reps, and they're expected today to approve that NBA plan on a return to play in July in Orlando. And, you know, I talked to Michelle Roberts of the Players Association last night, and, you know, one element of the dates that the league shared with the teams yesterday that, in her words, surprised her and is going to it's going to inspire some more talk between the Players Association and the league. That return date for next season, training camp on November 10th and the season tentatively starting on December 1. Because consider this, October 12th is the last possible date of this season. So you're talking about a turnaround for teams who are in the finals of potentially less than a month or about a month. That's got to be collectively bargained with the Players Association. What the NBA is trying to avoid next year, they don't want to push into the Summer Olympics in Tokyo, and they want to have their season done next year, you know, including free agency and the draft before the start of the next NFL season. There's still a lot of work to be done, and I think the enormity of this task of moving the league to this bubble environment in Orlando, you know, it's starting to hit the teams. There's a tremendous amount that's got to be done now to pull this off.
I no question about it. Very quickly, one other thing. I saw there's some concern for some of the older coaches being in the bubble when the season returns and the coaches are not happy about it. You spoke to some of them. What did they tell you?
Yeah, Mike D'Antoni, Alvin Gentry, two coaches, 65 years old, 69 years old. Greg Popovich is 71. You know, Adam Silver has said publicly, and the league has talked privately, you know, about some possible accommodations for these coaches. There's been talks of the older coaches wearing masks. Adam Silver even brought up the idea that those coaches in that more vulnerable ages for the coronavirus might not be on the bench. Rick Carlisle, the head of the Players Association, called Adam Silver last night. Adam Silver told him, hey, maybe I jumped the gun on this, but the Coaches Association and those coaches, you know, are very sensitive to the idea that they may be singled out. And essentially, if those coaches would have to wear masks, you know, I think the Coaches Association would want everyone to wear masks. You know, these are the kind of issues that are going to come up, you know, as the league tries to protect those people and those teams and those coaches don't want to lose a competitive advantage.
Yep, but these are unprecedented times. They'll work their way through it. Woj, outstanding. Thank you, my friend. We'll see you next week. Meanwhile, I go to baseball next. The Major League Baseball Players Association rejected with great vigor the league's plan for additional concessions yesterday. This came one day after Major League Baseball rejected the union's proposal for a 114-game season. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with a whole bunch of rejection and not a whole lot of silver lining, it does not seem. Jeff Passan, what do we need to be thinking about right now at the end of this week you called critical?
And Greeny, this has turned into a fetid stew of power, distrust, and ultimately money. Now, the power really is more about 2021 when the current collective bargaining agreement is up. The MLBPA wants to show no mercy on that after getting pushed around for years. The distrust is really built into baseball. It's a generational thing. That's not going to be fixed anytime soon. The real area where they can and should make progress is with the money. It's very simple. MLB is ready to implement a 48-game schedule, Greeny, and they say they're going to lose $640,000 per game this year. That comes out to about $461 million. The players would accept an 82-game schedule at full pro rata. That would be $787 million in losses, theoretically, for the league. We're talking about a $326 million problem, and when you take that and divide it by the 30 teams, this is a fight over $10.8 million per team.
It's impossible to imagine that that would call off a baseball season. So I guess, Jeff, I'll ask you to look into a crystal ball. Will it, at the 11th hour, will these teams figure this out, or are they headed towards a stalemate that means no baseball in 2020?
Yeah, I think they're going to figure it out, and I think there's going to be baseball back on the field this season. It just depends on what it's going to look like. Remember, Major League Baseball has the option of unilaterally implementing a schedule. Rob Manfred can come and say, we're going to play 48 games this year, whether you guys like it or not, per the March agreement that they have. Now, the players can say, you're not going to have expanded playoffs, you're not going to have mic'd up players, you're not going to have any help from us with your business ventures going forward. But I would like to believe that there is a place in the middle that they can meet where they can get a representative schedule, because 48 games just simply does not cut it.
All right, Jeff, your piece on ESPN.com this morning is terrific, by the way. Recommended reading for everyone. We'll see you later. Thank you. Now I get to football, or sort of tangentially football, because this, of course, involving Drew Brees. During an hour-long virtual team meeting yesterday, Brees addressed his Saints teammates and again apologized for his controversial comments. Then last night, Brees made his second apology on Instagram. This one was on camera.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yesterday. I know that it hurt many people, especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our black communities. I am sorry, and I will do better, and I will be part of the solution, and I am your ally. And I know no words will do that justice.
Diana Rossini, you've covered that team closely for a very long time. What were you hearing from some of the players after that meeting yesterday?
Yeah, I was told it was a very emotionally charged meeting where head coach Sean Payton led the way, but he gave the floor to Drew Brees. And a few of the players says that the apology was very similar to the video clip that you just saw there that Drew Brees posted on social media. And I was told it was very, very important for him to address his teammates and make sure that they knew that he truly believes that he missed the mark on this entire situation. I was told that Malcolm Jenkins, the most vocal player on this team when it comes to what we're discussing at this point, was the first to accept the apology from Drew Brees. Now, going forward, though, in terms of how this team feels collectively, I'm told from the players, this isn't going to change how they operate inside the locker room. They feel that they are a family. They're united on this. And for Sean Payton going forward, it was explained to me, he just wants to make sure the education continues in this locker room, because there's obviously been some confusion here and they haven't been on the same page. So I think the Saints locker room, like a lot of teams in the league and a lot of teams across the board here, are really taking the time to listen, reflect, and learn.
So what is next for Brees here as this moves forward? And I suppose the team, they move forward, they try and go about the business of football to the degree they can. What happens next?
So a lot of players say that they're done talking about this. They don't want to continue putting out statements, going on social media, having sort of a war of words between each other. They feel like they are on the same page at this point. But the message walking away from the meeting was, we need to do more as an organization. We can't just keep talking. We have to figure out a way. They haven't come up with how they want to do this and how they're going to operate going further. But my biggest takeaway for this team is once again, this is one of the strongest locker rooms. They are united on this, and it's really going to come down to the leaders on this team, like Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, and obviously their leader, Sean Payton, to come up with how they're going to move forward on this.
Yeah, you know, we talked to DeMario Davis yesterday. One of the points he made, and I think it's important here, is he said, I'm paraphrasing, I don't want to talk about Drew Brees because that's taking away from the issue we should really be talking about here. It's not that the Drew Brees piece of it isn't important, but it isn't the most important part. In the same way that the conversation from the very beginning and the way that Brees did the other day, it was hijacked away from what really the message is supposed to be. So I understand there are probably a lot of reasons why they would like to move the conversation forward. Diana, thank you. I know you'll be doing NFL Live later today. We will see you then. Meanwhile, we'll take a quick break here on Get Up. Just getting rolling. Now that LeBron and AD and the Lakers will finish the season, are they the team to beat? One of our experts says no. You'll hear that on the way. Get Up on ESPN.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We continue on Get Up this morning with this story from Florida State, where the football team held a meeting Thursday morning after defensive lineman Marvin Wilson disputed that new head coach Mike Norvell had reached out to players individually to discuss the death of George Floyd. After the meeting, Wilson thanked Norvell on Instagram for clarifying the issues, and here is what he posted. He posted, "We took a stand, we got what we wanted, and we are moving forward. I appreciate Coach Norvell for encouraging me to use my platform and speak for what me and teammates believe in. Be the change that you need when you were growing up and help build black communities up and take back what is ours." A fascinating turn of events with the Seminoles. And so we put together a group here to talk about it. Paul Feinbaum with us. Laura is with us. And Des, I want to start with you because I saw your notes this morning about players taking a degree of power in a way that perhaps they rarely do. I'd love you to share some of your thoughts here with the audience.
I tell you what, when I heard that story, Green, it really got me excited because I'm all for the players understanding who they are and what they mean to the university and to the areas the universities are in. So the Florida State players did one important thing. They came together. I remember back in 2015, Greeny, when the Northwestern football players, they wanted to form an official players union. They shot that down. But then a few months later, the players at Missouri, they got sick and tired of being sick and tired about the racial incidents on campus, and they band together, the white players, the black players, and they said, listen, we're not going to take part in any other football-related activities until the president, Tim Wolf, is removed. 48 hours later, Tim Wolf step down. You don't have to have any organization verify you as a union. Just come together as a team and for a common cause, and then you'll really realize just how much power you have. So that was just tremendous for me to see. Greeny, I think they're starting to wake up a sleeping giant with these football players.
It's a very interesting thought, Laura, because here we have been talking for the last few weeks during the coronavirus period about just how much money is at stake for these games to be played, and that clearly factors into this. What are your thoughts?
No, absolutely. And I think what Des said was so well said in all of this, because the players that I've talked to have always kind of felt like they have this voice that needs to be heard. And a lot of times they feel like they're silenced by a variety of things. The universities say, well, we don't want you to speak out too much because, you know, then we might have to do damage control. And I think that's all now gone to the side. I think we are going to see a renewed voice for these players and really a new age for them to start dictating what they want to. And it starts certainly certainly with the issues of racial injustice in our country, and that's going to continue to be important. Des mentioned Missouri. I thought it was really powerful to see just 5 years after the protest that he was talking about that did enact change, 5 years later, they are all peacefully protesting and then marching to the local courthouse to register to vote together as an entire football team under Eli Drinkwitz, their new coach. And I think we're going to continue to see things like this that are sparked by players, and it really can have a lot more reverberation beyond just this current time period, and who knows how that factors in with the future of the NCAA.
Paul, is this the beginning of the dawning of a new era in college football?
Absolutely, Greeny, and it's pretty incredible to watch for somebody who has covered the game for nearly 40 years. I mean, this is an unprecedented paradigm shift, the likes of which I don't think anyone could have predicted. I mean, I covered football in a day when Bear Bryant's players 40 years later still wouldn't criticize him. Today they would be doing it on social media, and it creates a lot of issues, I think, as positive as I think all of us agree. Coaches don't have a playbook. When someone like we saw yesterday can go on social media and unload on the coach in real time, what are they going to do? Yeah, they are playing along right now. I think deep down they have to be a little bit concerned in relation to discipline and how they get control of teams sometimes. Having said all that, I'm all for it.
Des, let me ask you, because it feels like most of the time when we talk about whatever power players don't have in collegiate sports, we're talking about money. We're talking about name, image, and likeness. We're talking about players getting paid. How does that factor into this? Are these two separate things to you, or can the idea of players getting paid be connected to this conversation?
I think they're all interconnected, Greeny. I believe that players are starting to see that the writing is on the wall. They are starting to realize that they're not powerless. For so long, the coaches, the administration, they had all of these players believing that they only had certain rights. They only could, their voices couldn't be heard on certain things, and that they couldn't make any money. Now that the players are starting to understand they can make money, or they're going to be able to make money on their name, image, and likeness, and that they have certain powers, I believe you're starting to wake up this sleeping giant. And I believe it's good. And Paul talked about, well, what type of concerns do the coaches have? Well, listen, if you're going to be fair and just to your players and treat them accordingly, then you shouldn't have any concerns. You should be okay. But if you're going to treat them unfairly, then watch out, because now they understand they have avenues in which to get information out.
Absolutely. Laura, how about the money piece of this? It feels to me those two things feel different to me. They don't feel like the same conversation.
Yeah, I do think they're separate in a variety of ways. But to Dez's point, this is just an overall grabbing of power that they've always had from the players, and this empowerment amongst each other. And so I think that may lead to more progress along those lines of just getting them more compensation beyond just name, image, and likeness. And we know that these things move very slow in the past. I think we could be entering an age where things don't move as slow for these players and where they can finally get a little bit more of what maybe they've already deserved. It is interesting, too, one final point on just the accountability factor here. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of these coaches held accountable by their players. And that really, when you think about this, is the one group that can truly hold their coaches accountable. The media really doesn't matter that much in this type of conversation. You know, maybe other outside sources or boosters or whatever it may be. The players are the ones that these coaches at the end of the day have to answer to. They have to lead. They have to coach them. And in order to do that, there has to be extreme buy-in from their players to be successful in that area.
Oh, that's such a good and important point, Paul, because we know that for successful winning is pretty much all anyone cares about. If these coaches are winning, the media doesn't make any difference what anybody says, and everything else is hunky-dory. But the players could be the difference there and actually hold even the most successful coaches accountable. How does that look to you, Paul?
I think it looks great, and I think it's going to be really interesting, Greeny, to watch over the next couple of weeks and months as players, you know, show back up on campus and are dealing with some very difficult issues with COVID-19. And while universities are not transparent, and quite frankly have never been, I think players are going to be. That's how some of these stories have started to surface already about positive testing. And I think the onus is on not only colleges, but the NCAA. The president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, has been tone deaf for so long. He's still fighting and looking for partners and trying to help in the NIL situation. He went to, he he wants Congress to do his job because he has done an inefficient job. And I think now players are going to stand up even louder. It used to be primarily basketball players. Now it's moved into football. In the NCAA and college football, the hierarchy of college football had better watch out.
Super quick, Paul. Successful people adapt to changing circumstances. Can you see some of these old dyed-in-the-wool kind of coaches, the Nick Sabans of the world, adapting to a place where they have to be held accountable to their players?
It's an interesting question. I think Saban has been savvy to do it because he has elevated and changed over time. I think some are going to get ferreted out very quickly, though.
That's a great conversation. All right, guys, thank you very much. Come back with more. Laura's got First Take coming up in an hour or so. And we have much more to do here on Get Up as we continue. The pause in the NBA may pay huge dividends for one team, the Brooklyn Nets. KD and Kyrie, might they come back? The answer on the way. Get up on ESPN.